Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
This show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org. That is the site that has all my podcasts. That's the site that has some of the YouTube videos of me explaining things. I'm going to be cutting some videos today to kind of give you a high level of Republic review. Hopefully you can share those. These are going to be maybe 2-3 minutes. They're kind of like the 90-second elevator speech as to what, why, how, and so forth. So I'm hoping that you find merit in these, that you can at least send these things out. Because I get it, when you send out a video of an hour and a half to people to give them all the details, a lot of times people don't know that they've got all the questions that they're going to come forth when you really start giving them information. Really? Well, how do you do that? Can you do that? And so there's plenty of information out there as far as what we can do, especially in these videos that I've got, but these are really more for marketing, so we're hoping to get these things out. Actually, these are going to be a part of the Red Pill Expo. They're going to use these for Red Pill University, which we're going to be getting involved in as well. So with that, you are listening. You are tuned into the only show on air 24/7, 7 days a week, at any point in time. There is no other show that asserts a constitutional solution to getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. So the number to call in, if you've got a question how we do that, if you have a question as to why we want to do that, because maybe that's the bigger question, because there's a lot of people that, you know, they want to do that, but there's some that go, well, why would we want to do that? Because, you know, we're making a lot of money here. We're getting a lot of free something for nothing. Anyway, that number to call in is 215-867-8255. That is 215-TOP-TALK. And so I have to tell you, as I told you, that the podcasts are located on reclaimingtherepublic.org. But the real reasons why you want to download these and listen to these on a regular basis is to, you know, verify the veracity of my argument. Am I correct in my assertion that this show is actually speaking of a constitutional solution in dealing with federal government overreach? Another good reason would be that the content on this show is actually stitched back and forth, because there's just no way I can cover all of this content in one particular show. So I will weave back and forth over a lot of this, and then we're going to really start going through marketing next, and I'm going to try to give you a re-jump, you know, after I get through all of these ratification debates. And why are the ratification debates so important? I will get to that in just a second. But third, bear in mind that this show does not cover and is not engrossed in the calamities of du jour, of the day. We are focused on getting this solution moving forward, getting engaged, empowering leaders who are willing to protect us from federal tyranny. And I go over that quite a bit on this show. And so, anyway, as I always do, I looked out of my window and I looked through and scanned the news. And there's always news. There's always some form of carnage in this big wreck of this federal disaster of Leviathan and overreach that the federal government has been exercising on us. Many people call it tyranny, but yeah, there's always going to be news to that, the deep state and so forth. Is this going to happen? It's not worth getting an ulcer over. If you want to stop it, there's only one way to stop it. And so as I looked and as I scanned through the news and looking out my window, I can tell you that there is no sign. There's just no way that they will ever peel back even one appendage of their tyrannical monster. I will tell you that it is never in any organization's self-interest to get rid of unnecessary, especially when it comes to government. You can take a corporation, and a corporation can find all sorts of duplication or irrelevant manufacturing, irrelevant work. And for a corporation to stay alive, it literally has to trim its fat. It literally has to get as lean as it possibly can. Then when it starts getting successful, it starts, you know, investing research and development or IRAD type of money and development in, you know, all sorts of new market spaces. And then all of a sudden, when it needs to become competitive again because it's got too bloated, it starts cutting the fat again. Government never does that. It is not in government's interest to do that. They are entitled to be able to do that. And as long as they've gotten away with it once, they are going to continue and always try to get away with that. So anyway, what that means is it leaves the responsibility to you and I, we the people, and we the people of the sovereign states, because it will require the sovereign states to stand up and take on this federal tyranny. And so, unfortunately, my friends, that means that you're going to have to do something. Either you're going to continue watching the wreckage and allow this to destroy us, or you are going to get motivated with the marketing and with this liberating, I really consider it liberating, concept of being able to call out the subcontractor in the contract, which is the federal government, and the contract being the Constitution. We can call them out. And in doing so, we can basically say, hey, you don't have the authority to do all of these things, and you're spending us into oblivion by doing these things. We think it's time you cease and desist, and we're going to take these back because, you know, guess what? The state's doing some of these things, or most of these things, already. That's how we do it. And we're going to have to do it if we're going to survive and maintain our liberty, because the only thing that allows us to maintain liberty, and the only thing that is protecting a despot or a tyrant from ripping our liberties away from us, is that thing called the Constitution. So the day that they set that aside, just remember, you were forewarned. With that, I usually have a standing question, and I typically ask every day, what or where in the Constitution gives the federal government the authority to create and manage land reservations for any purpose, whether that be for agriculture, trees, forestry, people, what have you. Where do they get this authority to create reservations, especially in state property? I mean, it's one thing if they created all the reservations within the District of Columbia, then, well, they have exclusive legislative authority over that, and they can do whatever they want because that is the land that was seceded by the states for the seat of government. So by all means, they can do that there. But in the states, within the states' boundaries, there are very hard limitations as to what the federal government can use state land for. So anyway, but that's the standing question. And based on the calendar today, today's Friday, so if you have an open question, if you have a desire to ask about something specific. I had somebody ask me what I thought about Trump once. If you, whatever, it's your show on Fridays. The questions are wide open for you. So if you've got a question, just call in. Again, that number is 215-867-8255. 215-TOP-TALK is the spelling or the phonetics of that number. So anywho, let me move on. We've got the Red Pill Expo coming up, and that's literally a week away. The premiere of the showing of the Dead Man Talking, which was about Mr. Finicum, and he actually, his wife will be there, and that is going to be the premiere showing of that. So if you want to see that first, come to Spokane. I know it's a hefty price just to see a movie, but there's a lot more that comes with that. As a matter of fact, I noticed that they offer catering. I believe they're offering lunch and so forth. So anyway, you got 2 weeks to get here, and I expect it to be actually a pretty big deal. There seems to be, I haven't found out how many tickets they've sold, but I believe they are selling quite a bit. Anyway, in the news paradigm, because I don't think they have any more of those, the first 350, I think those DVD sets are all gone. Anyway, in the news, I'm not sure if you heard the reporting regarding the G7 summit. And I'm not sure if you heard some of the G7 leaders talking about, and I think it was Marcone who made the comment that, you know, we can do this without the United States. We don't care about doing fair deals. And you know what? I want you to understand that's the paradigm. They don't care. They are going to do whatever serves them best. They will not, they will never give us a fair deal or an equitable type of opportunity. And it seems like they have the entitlement to be able to build, just like this Hydro One Avista sale that is basically affecting five of the Western states, of selling a public utility to Ontario, Canada, so that they can fleece America for more money to help support their infrastructure, their sadly failing infrastructure, because socialism doesn't work that well up there. And I find it interesting that these G7 leaders are literally feeling entitled that they can stick it to us at our expense. And so I hope Trump and us good Americans can poke them in the eye. But we have a hard break, which is poking me in the eye. So we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors and getting into the North Carolina ratifications. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process,
process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
And so I wanted to jump into the North Carolina debates as soon as I possibly can. But I did want to kind of linger a little bit longer on the G7 summit, only to the fact that it's ironic that when we all of a sudden try to level the playing field, and okay, so America has the biggest economy, and so we're supposed to suffer in socialism. Yes, we're the ones that are supposed to be paying more to the rest of the world so that they have a redistribution of wealth and allowing them to become a little bit more competitive or living the same quality of life. But in a free market and in a society that subscribes to individual liberty and individual sovereignty, that doesn't play. And so it rubs me raw, and I don't know if it rubs you raw, but the thought that they believe they're entitled to being able to get an advantage and benefits off of the American people. In other words, we have been subsidizing not only the socialist warfare with Antifa and everybody else through our welfare system and the entitlement system here in America, we've also been funding the world's socialism globalist economy in trying to enslave us. Why would we continue to do, why would we even want to do this other than the grand scheme of things that there are a lot of major players with major money that are going to become the elite rulers, or they're already pulling the strings. The IMF decided to take $50 billion of our dollars to give to Argentina. So it just really irks me that we are allowing this to happen. There is one thing that can stop this. It's called Republic Review. It's called the audit. They don't have the authority to continue to do these things in funding the IMF and all of these other things. We shouldn't be giving other nations economic advantages over ourselves. We should be always seeking the even playing field and having a fair, equitable exchange of tariffs or what have you. And so I don't know if it bothers you as much as it bothers me, but it just irks me that we're the ones that are funding all of this. And so as if we're not paying enough, and I don't get it. I don't know why people, proudly become communists and socialists. I guess they have no other aspirations. So these guys will take me. Anyway, let me move on. As I've always said, if we're not using the Constitution to fight our battles, then we're going to certainly lose all of our battles, especially political. And that means that we need to use the Constitution as our weapon for offense as well as our shield or our defense. And so the reason why I go through the ratification debates, you can go out and buy all sorts of material, and I tell you, go buy somebody's material on the Constitution that goes through that. That's really nice. It's interesting. And as a matter of fact, I have found that there are a lot of inconsistencies with what the framers said and with some people's perspectives of what this means in the Constitution, what that means. There is only one way to truly understand what one particular line or what a clause or the application of something in the Constitution, and that is the ratification debates, because that is where the framers actually argued and discussed. And so some people go, well, you know, listen to the anti-federalists. Those guys were right. No, they weren't right. What they were basically saying was that if, you know, they were making unrefuted charges. What really matters, the only statements that really matter, are those statements that are defining the Constitution as to how it is to be applied. So when Madison, Nicholas, and all of these other Federalists were saying, no, this is what this means, then that's what you take to the bank, because that is a locked down definition of what that clause means, what they are doing at that particular time, or what they're supposed to do in this particular case, and so forth. Those definitions are legally binding. And so, as I always say, and I like to contrast myself to all of the self-acclaimed front benchers, are the words in our founding documents that I am going to read and cite today, are these the words of deceit? Or are the words of deceit, have we been taught words of deceit from our education system, our professors, colleges, lawyers, politicians, and bureaucrats? I will tell you what I believe, but I want you to be able to make the determination for yourself, because the intent of this show is not just to educate you, it is to motivate you. And that's why it is important that I impart with all of these different examples that basically say the same thing, that the federal government is limited. And so before I kind of go forward, I know I mentioned that North Carolina was kind of unique. They actually had a ratification convention that I think went from July 21st to August 4th, 1788. The problem is that they didn't ratify the Constitution. They literally went through it, but they didn't ratify it. And what they did at the very end, and this is exactly what they said, and this is what they basically sent off to Congress: whereas this convention has thought proper neither to ratify nor reject the Constitution proposed for the government of the United States. And as Congress will proceed to act under the said Constitution, 10 states having ratified the same, and probably lay an impost on goods imported into the said ratifying states, resolved that it be recommended to the legislator, again, recommended, doesn't mean that they're going to do it, recommended to the legislator of this state, that whenever Congress shall pass a law for collecting an impost in the states aforesaid, this state enact a law for collecting a similar impost on goods imported into the state, and appropriate the money arising therefrom to the use of Congress. So in other words, they weren't ratifying it. They were basically saying, well, we're going to kind of give you money, but we're not going to join the union as of yet. Because one of the things they wanted to do was they wanted to find out if they were going to be successful or not. And they also wanted to ensure that they could protect their dollar or their own state currency, because apparently they were doing pretty good with their own state currency. Because remember, there's a few states that actually were able to pay off their debt. I believe Virginia was one, Massachusetts was another, and probably North Carolina was another one, because they did have a lot of commerce, or as far as raw goods going out, and they didn't necessarily buy lots of raw goods coming in, more finished goods and so forth. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to point out, because I know I talked about this yesterday, about slavery. And so I found two instances where it was brought up and it was kind of explained. And so I'll give you the two different explanations within the Constitution as they brought up a particular clause or what have you. And so Mr. Spate further explained the clause as the limitation of this trade to the term of 20 years, because this goes to the Article 1, Section 10, where the state slave trade is supposed to be shut down. And so he goes, the limitation of this trade to the term of 20 years was a compromise between the eastern states, or the northern states, and the southern states. I find it interesting that they referred to eastern states and southern states. Anyway, there's nothing in between. Anyway, South Carolina and Georgia wished to extend the term. In other words, they wanted more than 20 years because they wanted to be able to get a large enough slave base that they would be able to protect themselves further. Because, again, they understood that as soon as they could cut off the slave trade, that the natural growth of... because the South wasn't a great place for immigration. The North was, because that's where the industries were. That's where work was. And so they knew that the North was going to outnumber them and very quickly would be outproportioned within Congress. But I will let you hang on that, because I want to get into why those numbers really mattered so much and why they were forced into a civil war as soon as we get back after this break. So I will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Yes. And so actually the two parts that this 1908 clause were actually labeled in Article 1, and it was in Section 9, and it was the first and fourth clauses of the ninth section in the first article. And where you can find that is actually in Article 5, because, as I told you yesterday, Article 5 basically made it impossible for the southern states to create, because they were going to have a greater apportionment of representation in Congress than the North, or it would be kind of equal. And so they didn't want to let them use their lucre to literally buy an amendment. So that's why they put this clause, or this amendment protection clause, in Article 5 to keep the South from getting an amendment to basically getting rid of this closing down of the slave trade. And so anyway, let me move on to the second statement that I found. And Mr. Iredell basically begged to leave the, and basically he begged their leave to explain the reason of this clause. And he basically stated, in some of the northern states, they have emancipated all their slaves. If any of our slaves, said he, go there and remain there, because this is over a different clause. This is that clause of having to basically return slaves back to the South. And he's explaining how this compromise was done. If any of our slaves, said he, go there and remain there a certain time, they would, by the present laws, be entitled to their freedom, so that their masters could not get them again. This would be extremely prejudicial to the inhabitants of the southern states, and that's why that Underground Railroad was set up. And to prevent it, this clause is inserted in the Constitution, though the word slave is not mentioned. This is the meaning of it. The northern delegates, owing to their particular scruples on the subject of slavery, did not choose the word slave to be mentioned. So it's important to understand, though, that in Article 5, it only protected the insurance that the slave trade was going to be shut down. There was nothing to keep the North from being able to come up with an amendment that would have been able to strike that the harboring of slaves, and actually allow the South to basically, through attrition and runaways and so forth, through the Underground Railroad, allow them to end up losing their slaves and not being able to do anything with it, because that clause could have been removed, because there was nothing in Article 5 that protected that. It only protected the shutting down of the slave trade, because, again, if you go and read Madison's notes on the convention, it was pretty clear that all of the northern states, all 10 of the northern states, wanted to shut down slavery, period. They did not want to move the republic forward in conflict with the Declaration of Independence. And so the concession was that it was a state's issue, and it became a greater and greater state's issue. And things like the Missouri Compromise was where literally the South was using its money to buying bypasses of the Constitution, because the Missouri Compromise is unconstitutional. You have to understand that there's no constitutionality of a state being forced to be a slave state. If you wanted to do that, they would have had to amend the Constitution. They knew they couldn't do that, so the South ended up buying votes to getting their support so that they could have this Missouri Compromise create this unconstitutional law. So anyway, let me go forward in Governor Johnston, and this is a pretty interesting contrast to, if you understand the different governors, because I've kind of covered them. Governor Randolph was a Federalist, and he refused to sign the Constitution, but during the ratification debates, he embraced the Constitution. In Massachusetts, Governor Hancock President Hancock for the convention purposes, he was in favor of the Constitution with a Bill of Rights, and so was Randolph. Governor Johnston was in favor of the ratification of the Constitution as well. The only governors that really weren't was Henry, because Henry became, I believe, the governor after Governor Randolph, and Governor Clinton. And those two of Virginia and New York, those were the two governors that were not for losing their power and their control over all of the commerce. So anyway, this is what Governor Johnston said. Mr. Chairman, the learned member from Anniston says that the federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction in all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution and laws of the United States. The opinion which I have always entertained is that this will, in these cases, as well as in several others, have concurrent jurisdiction with the states and not exclusive jurisdiction. I see nothing in this Constitution which hinders a man from bringing suit, whether he thinks he can have justice done him. The jurisdiction of these courts is established from some purpose with which the state courts have nothing to do. And the Constitution takes no power from the state courts, which they have now. They will have the same business which they have now, and if so, they will have enough to employ their time. Apparently, there were a lot of lawyers that were worried that they were going to lose their job and not be able to do, you know, the things that good lawyers do at the time. Anyway, their complicated jurisdiction and the great extent of country occasions them a vast deal of business. The addition of the business of the United States would be no manner of advantage to them. It is obvious to everyone that there ought to be one Supreme Court for national purposes, but the gentleman says that a Bill of Rights was necessary. It appears to me, sir, that there would have been the highest absurdity to undertake to define what rights the people of the United States were entitled to. For that would be as much to say they were entitled to nothing else. A Bill of Rights may be necessary in monarchical governments where powers are undefined. Where we, see, most people don't understand this. We didn't have a monarchical government. We had a defined government that literally listed it, where they didn't, the sovereignty, and I've said this before, in Rome and in Britain and in all other republics, the monarchs or the Senate or the Parliament were those who had sovereignty. They had the ultimate say. But in our government that they created, they defined very specific things, and so they weren't the sovereigns over anything other than what they were given in those definitions or those enumerated powers. Were we in the situation of a monarchical country? No, sir. Every right could not be enumerated, and omitted rights would be sacrificed. If security arose from an enumeration, the Congress cannot assume any other powers than those expressly given them without a palpable violation of the Constitution. Such objections as this, I hope, will have no effect on the minds of any members in this House. When gentlemen object generally, that tends to consolidate the states and destroy their state judiciaries. They ought to be explicit and explain their meaning. They make use of contradictory arguments. The Senate represents the states and can alone prevent this dreaded consolidation. Yet the powers of the Senate are objected to. The rights of the people, in my opinion, cannot be affected by the federal courts. I do not know how inferior courts will be regulated. Some suppose the state courts will have this business. Others have imagined that the continent would be divided into a number of districts where courts will be held so as to suit the convenience of the people. Whether this is or another mode will be appointed by Congress, I know not. But this I am sure of that the state judiciaries are not divested of their present judicial cognizance, and that we have every security that our ease, convenience will be consulted. Unless Congress had this power, their laws could not be carried into execution. Interesting. So he was clearly defining jurisdictions and that the states weren't losing theirs. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so one of the things that I think you can start taking away from this is how dramatic or the fear-mongering was occurring at these ratification debates. And in North Carolina, one of the fear-mongerings were, because you got to understand, those who were selected at all of these ratification debates were really the who's who. These were the operatives of politics of the time, because there was a bench, or a pretty deep bench, all of these different lawyers, because that was really, it was either clergy, law, or what, because they didn't have an AMA, they didn't have engineering and those types of degrees. There was a real, I'll say, a limitation of opportunity for higher learning other than for the clergy and other than for maybe economics and those types of things. And so as you look at these ratification debates, again, these are the who's who of politics in each state.
And most of them are lawyers or clergy. Like you saw up in Massachusetts, there were a lot of reverends that I was reading where they weren't talking about the details of jurisdictions and so forth. They were talking in a much grander scheme as to why we needed to have this Constitution ratified. And so Governor Johnston was literally addressing what I will call the fear-mongering that was going on. And so let me read another statement that I found where this was a little bit different, because I think this was on the president or something like that, where the previous was really the concerns of, you know, all of us good politicians are going to lose our jobs and we can't allow this Constitution to be ratified. Or I should say lawyers. What's the difference between a lawyer and a politician? I don't know. I'm sure I just offended some lawyer out there. But in all honesty, I mean, most of the politicians of the time back in those days had either a law degree or a theocratic degree. So anyway, no offense to those lawyers out there. I'm sure there are good lawyers. I know you take probably a lot of heat from folks like myself. But anyway, Governor Johnston said this. He basically expressed his great astonishment that the people were alarmed on the subject of religion. This, he said, must have arisen from the great pains which have been taken to prejudice men's minds against the Constitution. He begged leave once again to add the following few observations to what had been so ably said by the gentleman last up. And he said, I read the Constitution over and over, but could not see one cause of apprehension or jealousy on this subject. When I heard there were apprehensions that the Pope of Rome could be the President of the United States, I was greatly astonished. It might as well be said that the King of England or France or the Grand Turk could be chosen to that office. It could have been as good an argument. It appears to me that it would have been dangerous if Congress could intermeddle with the subject of religion. True religion is derived from a much higher source than human laws. When any attempt is made by any government to restrain men's conscience, no good consequence can possibly follow. It is apprehended that Jews, Mohammedans, pagans, and etc. may be elected to high offices under the governance of the United States. Those who are the Mohammedans or any others who are not professors of the Christian religion can never be elected to office of the president or other high office by any one of two cases. First, if the people of America lay aside the Christian religion altogether, it may happen. Should this unfortunately take place? Is this not insightful, folks? Should this unfortunately take place, the people will choose such men as they think they do themselves. Another case is, if any person of such description should, notwithstanding their religion, acquire the confidence and esteem of the people of America by their good conduct and practice of virtue, they may be chosen. I leave it to the gentleman's candor to judge what probability there is of the people choosing men of different sentiments from themselves. So I'm not sure if anything played in your mind when I read that, but didn't Obama, who had a Mohammedan background, was he not just that person? But the question is, was he chosen because of his good virtues, or was he chosen because he was able to hide his nefarious machinations in what he had intended in transforming our constitutional republic into becoming a more socialist and a more subservient nation to Islam and the world? I mean, clearly, he was hitting the nail on the head here, that what one would think would happen in their paradigm. But I don't think Governor Johnston realized how far we had shifted But the bottom line is even though these other religions weren't constrained by the Constitution, there were plenty of constraints within each of the states. And in North Carolina, the Anglican Church was the state-sponsored church. And at the time, I believe you still had to have a license. And I believe every other church and every other faith was banned from openly practicing. They were getting the signals. And I believe North Carolina, they maintained their state-sponsored church well into the middle 1800s. I think South Carolina went to 1870, 71, something like that. So a lot of these churches did not lay prostrate their state-sponsored churches, and those churches still maintained the critical roles of compassionate service. That's why the states had state-sponsored religions, to take care of those things that they did not want government to do, because they did not want the, I don't want to say corruption at the time. I just believe that they knew that these pastors and way leaders were far better at providing those types of services than one could find in politics, because there was just too much to do with governing people and so forth. So let me go into Mr. Iredell and what he basically said in talking about enumerated powers. Let me see, how much time do I have before? Okay, I've got 2.5 minutes, so let me see. Let me go through this one, because this is a short one. The instrument ought to contain such a definition of authority as would leave no doubt. And if there be any ambiguity, he's talking about the Constitution, it ought not be admitted. So, in other words, that's why there is no ambiguity within the Constitution. He says the construction is not agreeable to the people, though he acknowledges it is a right one. In my opinion, there is no man of any reason at all, but must be satisfied with a clear and plain definition. If the Congress should claim any power not given them, it would he as bear a usurpation as making a king in America. If this Constitution be adopted, it must be presumed the instrument will be in the hands of every man in America to see whether authority be usurped, and any person by inspecting it may see the power claimed be enumerated. If it not be, he will know it be a usurpation. And so that's the whole point of this show. That's the whole point of what I'm doing and the auditing process, because clearly anything and everything the federal government has to be doing, or that they are doing, everything that they're doing, all 600 and some odd offices, agencies, departments, blah, 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 that they have created, if it is not within the Constitution, if it is not within an amendment, then they did not follow the Article 5 process, then it is a usurpation, just as Mr. Iredell was saying. And I will tell you that we are living under tyranny of the magnitude of 80%+. We're probably closer to 90% of the money that's being outlaid by the federal government is tyrannical usurpations, where we have not delegated them these powers to do this. What is it going to take to motivate you to start educating people that we're living under federal tyranny and that we have a process to save our Constitution Republic before it's too late? With that, I know that we're saying good night or good weekend. Have a good weekend to the terrestrial shows. So let me take a quick adieu for them, and I will be right back and talk about what we're going to get into next week. Thank you so much. Well, so with them gone and with what little time I have left, there is still a lot to go through these North Carolina debates. I will also get into, now that I think we've kind of gotten past Philadelphia or Pennsylvania, We'll get into Pennsylvania next week. The intent, I'm trying to get through the meat of the ratification debates for you so that I can provide you with a good laundry list of enough people saying the exact same things to basically lay waste to any argument that the federal government can do anything and everything they want to do. You know better. I know better. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic with your help. And so we will be back Monday. We'll see you then. Thank you so much.